Hello and welcome to Coach's Corner. I'm Coach Andrew Ports from Ingenuity Coaching. I help people discover and fulfill their passions and greatness. And my mission is to inspire and challenge you to dream big dreams, and with my coaching, help you to manifest those dreams into reality. You can visit my website at www.myfuturecoach.com and follow me on twitter.com/coachandrew. Tonight, if you have a question, we will be answering phone calls here. The phone number is 646-929-2893, and that's only if you're calling right now on the day of the show. If you're listening to this on a podcast, you missed your opportunity. If you call in, you'll be able to listen to the show on the phone. And if you have a question, press 1. Number 1 will let me know that you have a question. I will see a little hand up. We also have a live chat room right on the show page where you can feel free to join in. My guest tonight is Guy Pransetter, who is a very talented musician, singer-songwriter, a tattoo artist, and he's someone who is driven to help at-risk and special needs children at YCS, Youth Consultation Services. He's somebody who is really out there to make a difference in the world with his music, and he's a really amazing man, and I'm really lucky to have him on the show tonight. Guy, are you with us?
I am indeed. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure, man. So tonight we're going to be playing some of your music as well, and your band is called Stellar Ego, right?
Indeed, yes, sir.
And where can, first of all, where can people find you and your band?
Well, I guess the easiest way is to go to stellarego.com, www.stellarego.com, or Facebook. You know, Facebook's a really well-known place that people can find anything easily, so it's www.facebook.com/stellarego music.
Nice. So are you telling me you don't do MySpace these days? How 2000s of me?
Unbelievable, right? How quickly that star burned out.
Right. Unbelievable is right.
It is, really.
So this is, your CD is called Fear of Flying. Is this your first CD?
Well, this is the first CD I did with this lineup. You know, I put this lineup together in 2010, let's say. The end of 2009, where I met, it's a pretty interesting story because it was Dave Rudbar, who is also a life coach. He's a good friend of ours. And, I was just kind of complaining. Like, Dave, man, I'm a good songwriter. I can't find anybody to play. I don't know what to do. And he just, he's like, shut up and just, put an ad in the paper and just ask, enroll people in your music, man, and stop complaining. And that's what I did, I put a little ad on Craigslist.
Mm-hmm.
And then because I put that ad on, I kept, sort of trolling Craigslist every day. And I found this ad by a guy named Ben Cogan who said, hey, are you a singer-songwriter and can't get anybody to play your music? And I said, well, hey, that's me. He had this thing, this ad worded in such a way that was like, I had my head going, yeah, uh-huh, yeah, that's me, uh-huh, right, that's me. He totally sold me. But he's my bass player now.
Wow.
And, we became really good friends. I answered his ad, and we built a friendship and a relationship, and then he found a drummer for us and put together really the lineup. We started putting together the lineup that is right now called Stellar Ego, and that's where the CD came from.
Wow, that's an amazing story. And by the way, Dave Rudbarg has been twice a guest on this show.
Right, no doubt.
So nice to give him a shout out tonight. So you personally have quite a story, some of your backstory and how you came to be in this world and some of the things that have brought you to where you are today. I'd love to hear some stuff about that, particularly in the area of growing up.
Yeah, it's no secret. I've never been really shy about how my life began. My life began, very, very turbulent. I was born into this world with couple challenges to work through. I was born into parents who really weren't really prepared to be parents, and me and my two brothers ended up in foster homes, and a awarded to the state of New Jersey. And it was a long road, you know, like my two brothers were adopted. I never saw them again. We were like 4, 3, and 2, and I was the oldest. And I ended up, you know, in an institution that was really, really run poorly. And I really didn't, you know, I didn't have anyone else in my life at the time, you know, so I had no other family really that would take me. And I thought I was going to end up in the system and for the rest of my life. And what ended up happening is my mom, you know, halfway got her stuff together and was awarded me back to her. So I ended up, like, after this year and a half of just being, you know, in foster homes and in these few institutions, you know, I ended up being awarded back to my mother. And, you know, it was a difficult time, you know. I never really felt like she really, you know, really, really wanted me there. And I ended up, you know, becoming a younger adolescent, getting in a lot of trouble, and then started creating my own situations, you know, drugs and putting myself in dangerous situations, ending up in, you know, getting institutionalized and getting taken out of my house and just a few different situations like that until I finally, you know, I was either, I had a crossroads that, you know, with the courts where I had to either choose, you know, either I was going to, at the time they were doing this a lot, but they don't do it anymore, but I either was going to join the, you know, military, or I was going to go to prison.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I chose to go in the military, of course. And, you know, I often think back, man, I probably should have went to prison.
Oh, my God.
Because it was tough, man. I joined the Marine Corps, and, you know, it was really tough, and they did straighten me out, you know, they straightened me out. So I did get some of my life back together as a result of that. But, you know, that part of my life, you know, there was never any sense of real, like, peace or security when I was, you know, was in my mother's home. You know, there was never a sense of peace or security. I never felt really at home. I never felt like I fit in or I was a part of that. Or I never felt like I fit in anywhere except, you know, when it came to music. You know, I started playing music.
How did you come to play the music? How did you know, where did that come from?
Well, you know, like when you're a young adolescent, you know, and very insecure like I was really insecure and didn't feel like I fit in anywhere. The easiest, you know, place to fit into is sort of with kids like that are like sort of derelicts, you know, and that's what I was. It was easy to fit in there. You didn't have to, you know, excel in school or excel at sports or didn't have to do any of that. So I started hanging around with more, you know, derelict kind of kids, and a lot of them were musicians. And,
okay.
It's just kind of the way it was. And I started getting the bug, you know, my stepbrother at the time, he had this old beat up drum set, and I started coming home every day and playing it, you know, and just, it was like a way of just, you know, escaping, you know. And I just put the headphones on, I put music on, like 1972 or so. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of progressive music was popular. And, man, I just started playing music, and I found that, like, man, this was, like, a place that I could really, like, hide and really just escape, you know, and that's really what I started out using music for and playing drums.
And were you a good drummer?
Oh, I'm a great drummer.
Really? See, I've never seen you play drums, so I'm not familiar with it.
Yeah, it's funny. I play drums probably better than I do anything else outside of maybe songwriting. Like, I really believe in my ability to craft a song.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm, as a musician, like, you know, I'm most proficient at playing drums. I could play with anybody just about anywhere. Just walk in and sit behind the kit and fit in, you know, play.
And did you receive any training or instruction, or did you just figure it out?
I did not. I came home every day, and I put the headphones on, and I
mm-hmm.
played. And I just played and played and played, and I just figured it out, you know.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
That is really amazing. But you also play guitar.
Yeah, so that's a whole thing. I didn't start playing guitar until I was like 44. I was afraid of the guitar. I tried a couple times, and it was unsuccessful. And I never, again, like, not really, I'm not, never really taking lessons, you know. I just I would pick it up and try to figure it out, but it would never be. It's always much harder to just figure out. You know, it's a very frustrating instrument. So
yeah.
As you know, because you're a very good guitar player. So
thank you. And by the way, I never took a lesson. So guitars to me is drums are to you.
I
can't play. I cannot play the drums. I mean, if I had to save my life and with a drum beat, I might really be in trouble.
Right.
Rimshot, maybe I can do it. But that's about it.
Well, maybe a couple lessons, man. I'll give you a couple lessons. You give me a couple
guitar lessons.
That'd be great.
Okay.
Great.
Fair trade. So, now, when did you start writing songs?
Well, when I started playing, you know, I have been singing. In my mid-20s, in my early to mid-20s, I made a decision, you know, I wanted to learn how to sing. And I actually did go to singing lessons. I got a really amazing singing teacher. And I just decided, I really wanted to sing. I didn't know how. I was a terrible singer. I had no range, let's say. I mean, I had some pitch, and I guess I had some tone, but I had no range. Didn't know how to develop the voice, and, you know, I didn't have a naturally developed voice. So,
mm-hmm.
I started training vocally, and, so I started doing that, and then, you know, auditioning for bands and getting into bands, and I was in bands in the 80s, more hair kind of metal bands in the 80s, but I never knew how to play guitar, so I really didn't understand where my voice fit in the range of what it, you know, like, what it was really good at, like where my voice was really good at. So I didn't understand the keys or anything. So I more or less had to fit myself into whatever that band or that guitar player like played. And normally they would play a very standard place where, my voice was not very effective. I needed to be in the lower key, right? So
mm-hmm.
I would, constantly struggle with fitting in, but I didn't know why. And consequently, I wasn't very successful. I did a couple of big tours with a couple of really cool bands in the 80s, but never really broke out. But what I did do then was started to write songs, and I started to write lyrics, and I started to talk about, the things that happened to me in my life and how I felt about my life and how I felt about my experiences. And I started to see that, like, man, if I'm just, like, tell the truth, I just say what's real for me, like, people get it, I wasn't really like a wordsmith or, really, deeper, in being able to craft words and put words together. But I just told the truth in my songs, and people were like, wow, this is a good song. I really get it. And I mean, that's where it began.
Mm-hmm.
And, I did that maybe 10 years, of just trying to craft songs and learn how to do it better. But I didn't play guitar.
Okay.
And I started playing guitar when I really said, I'm going to do this thing. I'm going to play guitar and I'm going to write songs, which was maybe 3 years ago, 3 years ago, maybe 3 years ago. It all changed because now I could put chords to my melodies. Now I could be I could be the author of it, fully in control of where this thing is going to land and go, so. That was the biggest difference since 2009. I must have written maybe 200 songs, maybe more.
Say that number again.
Since like 2009, the middle of 2009, I've probably written over 200 plus songs.
That is a prodigious output, to say the least. Guy, what is the first song that you are proud of that you wrote?
First song that I'm proud of that I wrote when my son was born,
mm-hmm.
I wrote a song that was on like a solo record I did. But again, I didn't play guitar at the time, but I really, like, the lyrics of this song, really spoke to me. And really gave me the ability to communicate how I was feeling. I mean, if you ever had a kid, it's like those emotions just come like full on thrust, I wrote this song called Heaven, and it's kind of like how the context of the song was like how, this gift that I was given, in my son, like seeing him born, as if he came from heaven, you know.
Wow. Yeah, I actually got a request from the chat room to ask about your guitar-playing son.
He is going to always overshadow me, man, and I'm okay with that.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's amazing.
But he's not gonna give you lessons?
He could give me lessons.
Huh?
He's way beyond ability. Yeah. He plays in my band.
Oh, that's great. How old is your son?
He's 15.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been playing guitar for about 3 years too, and he's been like, you know, he's a very, very natural lead guitar player.
Yeah.
Amazing ability to just duplicate anything he hears, plus you know, really, he's very passionate about it, and you know, he's had a lot of great opportunities. You know, he's got to play with the guys in my band who are all professional musicians. You know, from the University of Miami, every one of them graduated, you know, college for music, and they teach him and they show him. And he has a great teacher. His name is Ross Barada. He's from Clifton, and he's a rock star, that one.
Oh, really?
He's awesome. Yeah, forget it. He's just a rock star.
Well, that's great. Is he featured on your album?
He is featured on my album. A song called Gasoline. The funny story about Gasoline, that was like maybe the first song I wrote for this record, Fear of Flying. And it just came out of me like within, I don't know, 6-7 minutes, the whole song was crafted, right?
Mm-hmm.
And but it was missing a hook. It was missing a riff, you know, all the way up until the very last, you know, recording session, where I brought Zen, my son, into the recording session to sort of hang out and listen and, you know, watch the other guys and, you know, pick up a few tips and this and that. And he started playing one of the beginning riffs as just like to play along with the song that was being, you know, played over the loudspeakers. And I said, stop. Everybody said, stop, everybody. Said, stop. And play that riff again, man. Play it right now. And he played it, and I'm like, that's it, bro. And we recorded it right there on the spot. And it's like the very intro riff of the song. Not the rhythm, but when that guitar comes in, that's him.
Mm-hmm. Wow. It sounds like a movie version of a song being made, by the way. Doesn't it?
Yeah, it sure does.
Anybody come in and yell more cowbell? That's what I'd like to know.
Exactly. No more cowbell. We're done with the cowbell.
Okay. Well, you know what? I think I'd like to play that very song right now.
That'd be awesome.
Okay.
Great.
Here we go. Stellar Ego and Gasoline.
I'm gonna make you mine.
big sounds of Stellar Ego here on Blog Talk Radio. I feel like a radio guy now.
Run, honey!
Okay, I just thought I'd throw that in.
Very nice. Thank
you very
that.
Much. That was great, man.
Thank
wow.
You.
So I understand from talking to you that your passion when it comes to music, you're not about how can I make money making music, but how can I change the world making music?
Yeah, you know, it began for me because, for the most part, like, music isn't how I make my living, you know, but I really respect and appreciate other people who that's, you know, that's how they make their living, and, you know, I want to support that, you know. But it was never a way for me to make a living, and it hasn't been, and maybe it will be someday, but I'm a tattoo artist, I own a tattoo shop, and that's how I earn my living in the world, and but for music, for me, was about how I can be a full-on self-expression of who I really am. And, you know, how can I make a difference? How can I use my music, you know, to support causes? It's not just even that, but it's also, like, in how I say who I am through my music, how can other people get, you know, a positive and powerful message that they hear for themselves, and how can I support causes and make a difference? And that's what I started doing, you know. I started using my music to, put it in and put other things in the limelight and start to... you know, bring attention to, you know, some needy causes, especially with this record, you know, because I've been trying to really promote it from the perspective of, you know, like, music can make a difference, you know.
So tell me some of the ways you've been able to make a difference with your music.
Well, in the state of New Jersey, you know, I'm very, very supportive of an organization called YCS, which is Youth Consultation Services, and they take care of about 3,000 kids around the state of New Jersey, and we're always doing fundraising, fundraising for them. We have a big project that's called the Big Camp Project for YCS, where we're raising money to buy, build, and create a year-round summer camp for those children so that they can have, you know, and feel and experience the healing power of nature, and be outside and, like, really understand any kid, like, really, but really kids in at-risk situations can enjoy, you know, being outside and being whole and free, like, you know, in the outdoors. And every one of our shows, you know, do what we can to bring YCS on board and have them, you know, be a part of that. And
and why that organization in particular?
Well, in particular, you know, they're very much, when I first got involved, it was really because I saw myself in all these little kids, you know. Of course, I mean, I was never in YCS exactly. They weren't really in business when I was in the system, but I was in a system that was a state-run system, and it was horrible. And I saw the good work that YCS was doing, taking care of the kids in a way that I don't remember being taken care of and treated in a way. I don't remember being treated, having their needs met in a way that I don't remember ever having, you know, my needs met. And I just said, man, I got to do something here. And I started to get involved more or less to maybe heal myself a little, you know, and get connected to the kids, you know, and do something to help the kids. And the camp project was a way to do that. And, you know, since then, I mean, we do a Christmas party every year, a big Christmas party where we have music and we give all the kids gifts and we create a big, big party. And we're doing our annual Walk for YCS, which is usually in October. It's going to be October 9th this year. It's going to be at the new Overpeck Park in Richfield Park, New Jersey. They have a gigantic outdoor band shell and a big walking park. We're going to have like 15 bands. It's going to be like an outdoor Woodstock. I think we're calling it Walkstock, YCS Walkstock.
Wow.
It's going to be like an outdoor Woodstocky kind of festival. They have a big giant lawn where people can set up, you know, blankets and just hang out. And so it's going to be amazing, and that's going to be a fundraising event that we're doing coming up soon here in October.
You know, October 9th is a big day in rock and roll history. Do you know why?
No, tell me.
That's the date of birth of John Lennon.
No kidding.
No kidding.
All right.
I hear October 9th, I think John Lennon. So I think that's a great day for you to be doing something like that.
Nice. Well, we're going to include that in the marketing.
Yeah, he would have been 71 on that
right.
day.
Wow.
Wow. So is there like a website for this? Do you have a specific thing? So if we want to put that out there right now, anybody like to participate?
Well, it will always be www.walkforycs.com.
Mm-hmm.
And that may not be up yet. You know,
okay.
We don't keep it up year-round. We do the walk once a year, so we don't generally keep it up year-round. It's up usually 6 months. So it may not be up and running right now, but it will always be the same, walkforycs.com.
Okay, great. That's
yeah.
awesome. Wow. I want to also, you know, you talked about tattooing and that's your living. I'd love to find out, how did you become a tattoo artist? And tell me more about that.
Well, becoming a tattoo artist is a process, you know. It's not an easy process. It's not a, you know, it's very challenging, you know. And in the late 80s, 1987, really, I was kind of lost, you know. I didn't really know what to do. I was in bands, trying to make it as a musician, trying to figure out how to justify myself in the world, what the heck I was going to do. And I stumbled upon an opportunity when I met a woman at the gym, and we became friends, and she started to tattoo me, and we became more friends. And then, you know, one day she just said, you know, for the most part, listen, you know, you'd be a really great tattoo artist. I'm looking for an apprentice. Why don't you, you know, consider it? And I just said, well, what does that mean? And I started coming around and, like, starting to see what it might be, if it might be possible for me, because I never imagined myself being a tattoo artist, so I didn't really know I could do it, you know? And I just learned that, like, man, if you really want to do anything, I mean, I could learn how to become a tattoo artist, man, you know? And I started the next 2 years of my life on an apprenticeship, and, you know, I worked really hard at it. I worked every day at it. And most of the time I worked at it, you know, it was like, I was doing things that had nothing to do with tattooing. I was earning my apprenticeship, you know.
Sure.
You know, I washed her car, I cleaned her house, I mowed her lawn, I fixed
did,
stuff
did she
in
call
the
you Daniel-san?
Guy-san.
Daniel-san. Wash the fence.
Well, wax on, wax off.
Wax on, wax off.
About.
Tattoo
what
on. Nope, tattoo on doesn't come up.
Yep.
Wow.
And that's how it began, you know. And then I started, you know, working in the shop, you know. And I remember when I actually have, you know, a tattoo apprenticeship training program in my business that I, you know, I train other people to be tattoo artists now. And the first thing I tell people is, man, the day that I exchanged money for a tattoo was the last day of my life I ever worked. I never worked another day.
Oh, that's amazing.
You
that's
know?
A beautiful thing.
It is a beautiful thing. Man, how many people, like, live their life doing something that they just love doing and isn't even like work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so.
Now, were you an artist or artistic before you became a tattoo artist?
I mean, I wasn't trained. You know, I didn't go to art school. I didn't do anything like that. Could I do something? Yeah, I mean, you know, I designed out, you know, CD covers, and I was going to say 8-track or album covers. To date myself a little bit.
8-track. Okay. Wow.
You're
older than you look, my friend.
I am, man. But yeah, you know, I did stuff like that, but I wouldn't say I was a trained artist or anything, you know. I tell people all the time, listen, man, you know, you can learn how to do anything, man. You can learn how to do anything. You really want to.
Absolutely. Why not? I'm taking up dancing right now.
Are you?
Yeah.
We'll see about that.
Yeah, well, you know, I have 3 left feet, so it's going to be a little more challenging than usual.
I look forward to seeing that, man.
Okay, that will be on YouTube, no doubt.
Uh-huh.
So what are some of the things you've done in tattooing that you're really amazed by, or that you've amazed people with?
I mean, portraits are always amazing. You know, somebody comes in and they have a picture of their mom, their dad, their kid that died or something like that, you know, heavy stuff like that, you know. Those are always, like, they're really like challenging, scary, you know, they make you stand up and pay attention a little bit more. Like somebody comes in and wants, you know, C-39 Panther off the wall, I can do it with my eyes closed, you know, like I don't even have to look at the thing, I could draw it, do it and tattoo it in 20 minutes, you know.
Yeah.
When they come in with a picture of their mother, you know, that has to look exactly like their mother, you know, like I start, you know, that's a whole nother level of paying attention, you know. So, you know, those are always great to do. They're always challenging. And I do them, you know, with as much passion and precision and expertise as I can, the best that I can, you know, like I do everything.
So what does that process look like of getting somebody's mom's face from picture to wherever on the body?
Yeah, I mean, this all starts with the picture, you know, like it has to be a really good picture. Sometimes people will bring in these like 1929, you know, with the picture of their mom, their face is about the size of an eraser, and they want you to duplicate that on their, you know, rib cage. You know, I mean, it's like it's really hard, you know, you can't do it that way. You know, you can't blow that picture up big enough, you know, for it to really be able to pull out the identical features of that person. So,
sure.
You know, so it always begins with the picture. The best picture you bring me, you know, the best picture you're going to get, the best tattoo you're going to get. So, you know, then, you know, it's a process of taking out all of the features, you know, blowing it up really big and then pulling out all of the features, tracing out all of the features and transferring that tracing that often looks like, it often does not look like the person, you know, because it's all just shadows and features and, you know, so it doesn't really look like them. And when you put it on them, people look like that's going to be my mother. Like, you know, I don't know, man, it don't look like her. But, you know, once you start filling in the shadows and filling in the features and the wrinkles and the eyes are always the most important thing because they'll always tell the story. You know,
sure.
They always will tell the story. You do the eyes right and get some of the other stuff wrong, you'll still be perfect, you know. You'll still look great.
Wow. So anybody listening, if you're in the market for a tattoo as well as for great music, you've come to the right place. Where could somebody come and get a tattoo from you?
You can come to my shop, 286 First Street in Jersey City, New Jersey, Body and Soul Tattoo. And, you know, we're there 7 days a week from noon till 9 p.m.
Nice. So guess what? It is raining, pouring right now in New York City.
Yeah.
And what does that make you think of?
It feels like rain, man.
Yeah, I think so.
A time back in the day.
Del Rigo here on WBTR in New York.
Awesome, man. Thank you for that. Love that song.
My pleasure. I want to hear how that song came to be on this very rainy night.
Yeah, that song, it's a basic girl gag kind of thing. You know, this girl that I was seeing from California, man, I was just mad crazy about her. And then she was mad crazy about me, and then she wasn't, you know, just like that. That's how it happened. And I just felt like everything was dark and the rain was, like, never going to end. The feelings of, like, you know, being just, you know, lost. So that song actually was written in like 5 minutes, like literally came out exactly as it is right there on that record, like for the most part. The only difference is I sent the rough track to Dave Rudbard.
Mm.
Again, Dave Rudbard, he's all over the place, man. He's all over my life.
Yes, and he is in the chat room, by the way.
Oh, is he?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, I sent him the rough track, and he's like, "Yeah, you know, it's all right. It needs, you know," he gave me the old, you know, the Dave Rudbard, you know. And as a result of him just, like, really being persistent about there's something missing here, like, all those layered guitars got created. They were not a part of the original arrangement, you know. So we created all those layered guitars based on Dave saying it's missing something, you know. And if he didn't say that, I probably would have thought it was great and just went with it, you know.
Hmm. So that's some good feedback you got.
I got some great feedback.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And Dave asked me to ask you a couple of things. First of all, what about the New York Tattoo School?
Well, I talked a little bit about that before. What I've done in my career, you know, has been about training. It's about, you know, teaching, training, developing. So, you know, it's just a natural evolution for me to take that on as a profession. You know, like I really looked for opportunities to do that. And I stumbled upon, you know, an idea in my travels, you know, of creating, you know, an academy of higher learning in tattooing. And it's really never been done effectively. There are a few of these other things out there that, you know, run these two-week tattoo courses, but you know, that's not what I do. I have a long-term apprenticeship training program where I work with people, help them develop, you know, all areas of not just their drawing or tattooing, but, you know, even in their life, I really help people, you know, like you do, you know, create purpose and, generate mm-hmm. passion and power in their life, you know, because so many people who are tattooists already will do everything in their power just to discourage a new person from becoming a tattooer. They're threatened by it.
Right.
Unless it's like their friend or someone they think should be a tattoo artist. It's like they want to own the power of declaring who will be anointed the next tattoo artist, right? Where in reality, it really should be something that, you know, that the person who makes that decision is the person who wants it the most, you know? And so I just created an opportunity where people who want it the most, man, could come and learn how to do it, you know, in a very powerful, safe and methodical, systematic way, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's working out great, man. I got 10 solid students there, you know, 40 hours a week, learning how to be a tattoo artist, you know, from every aspect of the game.
Wow. That's amazing.
It is, man.
Good stuff.
You don't even know. You don't even know how amazing that is. It's like, it's unheard of amazing. You know,
well,
that,
I think you need a little bit of a TV show or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you would think, you know, there's a show out right now called, I don't even want to say the name. It's like some reality show that, that people are mistaking me for, you know, because they just do a web search, and I'm very high in the Google search, so I'm one of the first ones that come up, so they think that that's me, and every day I'm constantly having to re-educate people that, man, this doesn't take 2 weeks, Brian. This takes 2 years, right? Like, you're going to have to invest years of your life into this if you want to do it, you know?
Mm.
So it's you know, it's TV is great, and I wouldn't be against doing something that was on my terms, but I
sure.
certainly wouldn't put myself, I wouldn't put myself in one of these situations where, you know, I got this TV crew telling me how to do what I do.
Yeah.
It's never going to happen.
Okay. Well, that's because you're a man of principle.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome. So I hear you have a gig coming up on August 24th in New Jersey.
Yeah, it's actually like our very first real New Jersey gig. I mean, we've done some other little things here and there, but for the most part, we've been a New York-based band playing in Brooklyn and Manhattan. And, you know, I'm from New Jersey, and all my guys are from Brooklyn. So we've mostly been playing in Manhattan. So here's our first opportunity, man, to play an amazing gig in Teaneck, New Jersey at Mexicali Live, which is an amazing venue, man. I mean, it's one of the most professional rock venues, you know, in northern New Jersey. It's really, really good. They got a great sound system and great stage, great ambiance in the place, great food. It's like a Mexican restaurant. You can eat and watch live rock and roll music right in front of you.
Wow. I've not heard of that place until just now.
Yeah, it's a really great place. It's called Mexicali Live. It's on Queen Anne Road in Teaneck, New Jersey. And if anybody has any, you know, any questions about the gig, it's August 24th. We're going to play at 9 o'clock. It's a Wednesday night. It's early, but not too early and not too late, so people can come out and support us. I think it's like $5 to get in. If you need a ticket, call me. Or go to my website on Facebook, Stellar Ego. Anywhere Stellar Ego, I'll get it.
Okay, great. So we have a few other good songs here. Tell me a song from your new album that you'd love me to play that you have a good story for.
Well, like every one of them got stories, which is cool. But I guess the most important story is a song called Shine,
mm-hmm.
last track on the record.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote the song Shine. I was invited to go to a fundraising event for an organization called Somali Mom Foundation. And Somali Mom is a woman who was, as a child, was a prisoner in a brothel. And she was enslaved, really, a child in child slavery, and forced, you know, into prostitution. And she escaped as a young teenager and created as a young woman an organization called Somali Mom Foundation, which has since, you know, saved about 7,000 young girls, mostly young girls, from prostitution all over the world. And I just got really engaged in this woman and her, you know, her fight, her plight, her story. And it was really amazing. So I went to this fundraising event that my friends put on. It was on the top floor of this amazing West Side building, penthouse. And I met all these amazing people. And as I was in this party, which really what it was, I went into this one room, and in the room was the documentary running on the wall in a film, on a film wall, of the story of this woman. And I started watching it, and I was just completely engulfed in listening and finding out about her. And between the elevator ride down and my car, I wrote this song, and I wrote it as a tribute to her. And I've used the song. It's actually featured on their website. This is our first video. Our video can be found on YouTube and on our website. On my Facebook, it's everywhere. It's our first video, but the most important thing about it is that they're now using the idea that I created by making a tribute song and a tribute video to inspire other musicians and other artists all over the world to create content for this new webpage that they're putting on their website all over the world. And ours is the first one. We're the first one that did it, and ours is featured on it, and it will continue to be featured on it. And now that there's people in, like, Mozambique, like, making videos and creating stuff, and, you know, to all out of, you know, what we did. And I had a meeting with them, and they shared this idea with me, and I just, I couldn't believe it. I was sitting there, like, Anyway, the video, which is also on the website, is shot by a guy named Ali Powell, who's a really, really gifted videographer and director. So Shine is a great song. I'd love if you played that.
You know, I just tell you, it was something really fun. A lot of people don't know this, but in the music world, you cannot copyright a title of a song. So you can actually have many different songs with the same name. And it just struck me as you were talking about the song that the very first song that Frank Sinatra ever was on a recording of was when he won the Major Bowes Amateur Hour with a group called the Hoboken Four, and the name of the song was Shine. And it's a completely different song than yours.
You would know that.
I would know that. This is something that I would know. But here I would like to play, and I'd like everybody to just relax, sit back, and because we have a nice long song called Shine from Stellar Ego.
I was living in the madness, and it was too hard to tell that I was drowning in my sadness and my own personal hell. It was a kind of my own making, designed to keep the world away. And at the point of my breaking, I found the courage to stay. And one look in your face was like a million stars aligned. And I knew it was only in my mind.
Shine your love light down on me. Let the world see.
Ego and Shine. Nice.
Thank you, sir. Thank
never
you so
felt
much
more
for
like
that.
Oh, my pleasure. I never felt more like a radio guy than I do tonight.
Yeah, man. So awesome. Somali Mom Foundation, man. Like, if people want to know about it, it's really a great organization. It's really how I can make a difference internationally. Like YCS and what I do locally, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but we actually donate a portion of that song and of every record sold to Somali Mom Foundation to help, you know, prevent children from being, you know, slaves.
So I have one more thing to ask you about, because we only have a few more minutes left, believe it or not, in our show.
Right.
But I was asked to ask you about how one of the best Christmas songs ever written, Christmas in New York, was written.
Yeah, man, I wrote that song. That's the best Christmas song ever written.
There you
that
go.
Nobody ever heard. Right, so how do you get people to hear the best Christmas song ever written, you know? You go and play it live in the middle of Times Square or at Rockefeller Center is what I did. So I wrote that song a couple of years ago, maybe 2-3 years ago, and it just came to me, man. I wanted this girl that I was telling you about before to come back from California.
Yeah.
And, you know, so the original name of the song was Baby Please Come to New York for Christmas. That was the original name of it. And I wrote
it. Is it the same girl from Feels Like Rain?
Yeah.
So now it feels like snow, I guess. So.
Yeah, it feels like snow. And,
yeah.
And you know, it was just like a way that I was going to, like, try and get her to come back here from California.
Mm.
And then I played it for a friend of mine, Chris, and Dave Rudbard. And they were like, man, this is the best song in New York Christmas song you ever made, man. You got to record this thing. And I did. And it was great. And then I didn't really know how to market it. So I went into Rockefeller Center with my guitar. I almost got arrested. And just, you know, started singing it right in the middle of, like, thousands of people. And I got all these people around me and, like, cheering. And I almost got arrested.
Wow. But you didn't, and that's a good thing.
But I did it.
Yeah. And did the Naked Cowboy chime in at any point?
He was nowhere to be found, man. He was wearing a snowsuit somewhere. It was cold.
Yeah, I guess that wouldn't be a good day for the Naked Cowboy.
So I played an acoustic guitar in the middle of the winter with, you know,
that would be bad. He needed heated guitar and heated underwear.
Right.
But so Guy Pranstetter, I want to thank you very much for spending an hour with me today in Coach's Corner. It's been a very wonderful time and listening to your music. I hope everyone loved what they hear. And again, if you are interested in hearing more, learning more about Guy, you can go to stellarego.com, or you can find the Stellar Ego on Facebook and go buy his album.
iTunes, we're on iTunes, Bandcamp. I mean, if you just put Stellar Ego in Google, you'll find it in 100 places.
Great. So, absolutely. And everyone, thanks for listening. And we'll be back here on Coach's Corner after Labor Day with a weekly show. And you can find me again at www.myfuturecoach.com. Follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/coachandrew. Thanks for listening, and good night.